The next presenter is Moshe Zerzion, who is a medical doctor and one of the principal investigators for the forthcoming Israeli clinical study.
Is a slot for the... Not the USB entry here. Okay, let's see.
There is no.
Where? No. The only one is this, I think.
That's the mouse.
Yeah. The only one.
5 inch version. It's a big Toshiba device. No, there are two.
There are two. Okay.
Yeah. Now let me do it.
Let me do it.
I see.
Okay. Yeah. You see from there? Okay, this is one, and this is the other one. Okay.
If you can copy your presentation, the hard.
Good morning to everybody. Okay. How does it work? I am really a newcomer to the subject of ibogaine, but I work with drug addicts as a psychiatrist since 1994, and what we are planning to do in our hospital is a clinical trial with ibogaine. We got the permission from the Ministry of Health, the Helsinki Committee in our own hospital. And the Ministry of Health Helsinki Committee gave us to the permission to proceed with the trial, and we are just waiting for the ibogaine. What I brought here is simply what was my own preparatory work for this trial. That means to do some recopilation of information of my available information on ibogaine. As everybody knows, it comes from Africa. It's a derivative of the Tabernante iboga, this shrub that we see in here, and it was initially used by the Buiti culture, which Jack presented so nicely. Then I have nothing to add about the subject. The plant is used for religious and medical purposes by this Buiti culture in Gabon. And something that is important, the NIDA, the National Institute of Drug Abuse, has given significant support to animal research. And the FDA has approved phase one study in humans that were eventually suspended because of this. Apparently, it was because of these dead cases that we will later talk about. Now, which is the evidence for the ibogaine effectiveness includes reduced drug use after using ibogaine, and less withdrawal signs, both in animal and in humans. Without including all these all the subjective experiences that we heard about before. What we know that ibogaine itself is the most abundant alkaloid in the root bark of the shrub Tabernante iboga. In the dry root bark, we can find something like 5 to 6% of ibogaine. In its metabolism, it undergoes demethylation to form its main metabolite, which is noribogaine. Noribogaine itself has a longer half-life than ibogaine and explains some of the prolonged sustained effects of the ibogaine after the treatment itself. And another substance which was talked about is 18-methoxycoronaridine is an ibogaine congener, is a synthetic substance. but it seems to have efficacy similar to ibogaine with less potential toxicity. We are going to say a few words after in a few minutes about this toxicity. This is the chemical structure of ibogaine. This imidazole structure remain as of the structure of serotonin is similar to neurotransmitter serotonin. And something interesting about this ibogaine structure is this position 11 and 10th in the molecule, when they are responsible, the methyl group that is present in the natural form of ibogaine in this position is responsible for some of the side effects, the toxic effect of the substance, when it is replaced in this position, the 16th position, it's the methoxycoronaridine, and it's much less toxic than the original product. Okay, the forms of the substance come the botanical root bark. This is the natural form of from which from this bark is obtained the original ibogaine. Another form is the extract. This extract is taken with the spoons, the 6 to 12 spoons that you talk about, Jack, and is estimated to be 15% ibogaine. And another form is the purified ibogaine hydrochloride, which is part of the NWS protocol, which is 99.4% purity, but I hear a new value is something like 95%, not 99%. Okay, I think it's we have very very few things to tell about to add about the history of ibogaine. It's isolated and crystallized from the root bark. What is interesting, till 1970, it was sold in France as a product called Lambaren. As a neuromuscular stimulant for fatigue, depression, and recovery from infectious disease. This was the indication of the ibogaine in much less dose, in much less 1 to 5 milligrams per kilogram. 1 milligram to 5 milligrams as a whole dose, excuse me. But it, now it's forbidden. Another thing, it was used for psychotherapy, to help in psychotherapy, by Naranjo. Naranjo is a psychiatrist, and he used it as a dose of 4 to 5 milligrams per kilogram, and he had a patent in France to use it. The World Health Association, the World Health Organization, classifies ibogaine with the hallucinogens. That means it has hallucinogenic properties and the stimulants. And now the FDA assigns it one ibogaine Schedule 1 classification, that is a dangerous drug. Okay? This is the significance. What? No medical use, exactly. Excuse me. With no medical use, okay. And now, what I can add to the subject is lots of received the U.S. patent for use of ibogaine to treat opioid withdrawal, and additional patents for indication of dependency on cocaine, alcohol, nicotine, and polysubstance abuse. In Europe, there is a lot of research done in Holland. And in 1991, NIDA started an ibogaine project for preclinical toxicological evaluation and development of a human protocol for treating people with ibogaine. And Deborah Marsh got approval for human trials. The dosages were 1, 2, 5 and, milligram per kilogram. The activity was suspended, apparently because of budget reasons. Yes?
I would like to comment on that. The FDA study was not suspended.
No?
The FDA study was abandoned by the researchers in for-profit clinic rather than continue with the FDA study.
Okay.
One more clarification on the half-life of ibogaine and noribogaine.
Excuse me.
The half-life of ibogaine and noribogaine are virtually similar, 31 and 32 minutes. Noribogaine appears to be longer acting because, according to the work of Stanley Glick, ibogaine is sequestered in fat, slowly released over time, and then metabolized into noribogaine, which throws higher levels of in the blood than ibogaine.
Okay, thank you. I will clear. NIDA ends the ibogaine project. The opinions of the industry, in pharmacological industry, are mostly critical. And another thing is this mailing list, which started in 1997, which is a very important forum for discussion of all the in internet of all the subjects related to ibogaine. And it became to be increasingly available in alternative settings in view of the lack of approval in the USA and Europe, like Panama and St. Kitts. This is a photo of St. Kitts. What about the mechanism of action of ibogaine? How does it work? And one of the things is that it appears to have a novel mechanism of action. I would say not such a novel mechanism of action, but and I will explain why. Effects may result from complex interactions between multiple neurotransmitter systems. Till now, we know that SSRIs, for example, as an antidepressant, they act on the serotonin, sometimes antipsychotic drugs act on the serotonin or the dopamine system, or and so on. But we don't use to use drugs that have such a broad spectrum of interaction with neurotransmitter systems. And then one thing is most of the experimental work with ibogaine that I found use this standard dose in animals. I talk about mostly about rats. This dose of 40 milligram per kilo intraperitoneal is the standard dose of the medication in experimental work. Now, one of the involved system is the glutamate system. The glutamate system, this is a representation of the receptor, and is one of the most investigated systems today in many cerebral processes. One of them is addiction, one of them is learning, memory, and also the mechanism, even in the mechanism of schizophrenia and the new treatments for schizophrenia, glutamate is a really a warm field of research. And it's very important in the mechanism of action of ibogaine. For example, there is evidence that antagonists of the NMDA subtype of glutamate receptor and potentially promising class of agent for the development of medication for addiction. That means... and there is apparent activity of ibogaine as a non-competitive NMDA antagonist. And as it has been suggested to be a possible mechanism of anti-addictive addiction of ibogaine. This is one of the things that is clearly known. What we know, it's even though they say non-competitive, ibogaine inhibits competitively the binding of the antagonist MK-I101, this is a standard tool for investigating the NMDA receptors. It reduces glutamate-induced cell death in neuronal culture. And one other thing important for us, it lowers the concentration of dopamine and its metabolites, but MK-801 did not. And this reduction of dopamine is very important in the effect of any substance on the rewarding circuit of the brain. Then, glutamate on learning, memory, and neurophysiology, dopamine and glutamate are involved in neuroplastic modulation of normal and pathological learning. Hippocampus is the part of the brain that is involved in this mechanism. And we say that addiction is really an anormal learning, is really a pathological way of learning. And then apparently ibogaine influences the neurological process involved in learning addictive behavior. Then it's something the physiological mechanism that is influenced is the long-term potentiation, the LTP, and then through influence on the long-term potentiation, which is a mechanism of action of a neurotransmitter that produces long duration of processes in the synapses instead of short stimulation or inhibition, it modulates the learning, the memory, and the neuroplasticity of the brain. And this is a very, very central mechanism of action of ibogaine and modulating the learning phase, the learning part of the of this addictive behavior. It works also on the opioid system, and on the opioid, ibogaine and norovirogaine, also the metabolite, are mu and kappa receptor agonists that stimulate these receptors. Ibogaine and noribogaine have no antinociceptive effect. That means when you give morphine or heroin or any opiate to somebody, they cause analgesic effect. But ibogaine is not so analgesic. And then, but they stimulate these receptors. Where do they do that? They work apparently on this at the second messenger level. That is not at the receptor, but at the part of the system that mediates the action of a substance between the receptor and the intracellular level. And this is the second messenger. And apparently, ibogaine acts on the second messenger, which in this case is an enzyme called adenyl cyclase. And something very important, it explains why it's really even dangerous to use ibogaine together with opioids. Why? Because this system is potentiated by the addition of ibogaine to the receptor. And this is why the mechanism is very, very... is strengthen the action of opiates. The kappa stimulant imitate the action of ibogaine and at reducing cocaine and morphine self-administration. That is, then ibogaine reduces also through kappa stimulation the cocaine and morphine self-administration in animals. The serotonin system. How does it work on the serotonin system? Here is the chemical structure of serotonin, which is, as I said before, similar to the structure of even similar to part of the structure of ibogaine. Ibogaine binds to the serotonin transporter and increases serotonin levels in the nucleus accumbens. Nucleus accumbens is a part of the brain, also a part of the rewarding system in the use of drugs. Noribogaine binds 10 times strongly than ibogaine to this transporter. And this is one of the mechanisms by which ibogaine may reduce dopamine secretion through serotonin activity in the nucleus accumbens. Another mechanism. Another receptor with which directly interacts ibogaine is the transporter blocker. That means ibogaine blocks the reuptake of dopamine, and then it reduces the dopamine level because it's less resynthetized, and increases the dopamine metabolites level. That means it's more destroyed, and ibogaine decreases to the prolactin levels. Then, on acetylcholine is a weak inhibitor of binding to muscarinic receptor subtypes. That is there is functional evidence of effect of ibogaine on the muscarinic receptors. These are acetylcholine receptors in the central nervous system, and it decreases the heart rate through this acetylcholine-like effect, and it produces desynchrony of the EEG. There are works on investigating the electroencephalogram, and another thing important over this effect of ibogaine on the electroencephalogram is that ibogaine produces an EEG that is like REM sleep. That is similar to REM sleep. That is very interesting. Another receptor involved like the sigma receptors. And the sigma receptors are a group of receptors that have no natural endogenous ligands. You know that when we have a receptor, we look for the ligand that that our body other body produces. Till now, we didn't found any endogenous ligand for these sigma receptors, but ibogaine binds to them and relatively strong in the central nervous system. The toxic effects of ibogaine, which were investigated and described mainly in rats, not in humans, toxic, properly speaking, toxic effects, neurotoxic, are mediated through sigma 2 receptors in the central nervous system, which increase the activity of the NMDA receptors, and they produce neurotoxicity. The sigma receptors cause cell death through the mechanism of apoptosis. Apoptosis is supposed to be a genetic program for cell death, and it's activated through the NMDA system. And binding to these sigma 2 receptors, they increase the calcium concentration and activate this apoptosis. That means this is the part of the mechanism of neurotoxicity which was described in animals. I repeat, no? And another mechanism of action which was described in a very, very nice article is this activation of the glial cell line derived neurotrophic factor. It's a molecular mechanism that mediates the desirable activities of ibogaine on ethanol intake. This, when ibogaine is injected in another area of the brain, the ventral tegmental area, it reduces the self-administration of ethanol and apparently is through the activation of this glial cell-derived neurotrophic factor, which is a new described mechanism of action. Another thing is the addition to ibogaine previous to the administration of opioids reduces the mechanism of tolerance is not developed. Okay, which is the evidence of efficacy in animal models? To demonstrate through animal models that somebody is active, we have to check the drug self-administration paradigm, the acute opioid withdrawal, for example, the conditioned place preference, the locomotor activity, and the secretion of dopamine. All of them were checked, were investigated with ibogaine, and we have here some results. On drug self-administration, ibogaine given to animals previous to morphine, heroin, cocaine, alcohol, and nicotine, caused reduction of self-administration. Thank you, boss. And these results lasted for something like 5 days in rats, and the water intake would stop just for 1 day. 5 days in rats means long time in human beings because of the lifespan of rats. That means these effects are really lasting for long time, and the results improved with repeated treatments, and this happens too in humans. Another thing is that noribogaine has also been reported to reduce morphine and cocaine and heroin self-administration. Some of the iboga alkaloids tested produce tremors in animals, and the methoxycoronaridine reduced drug intakes, but not water intake. That is less more selective. About acute opioid withdrawal, we say the dose-dependent attenuation of naloxone precipitated opioid withdrawal symptoms. That means when we take an addict rat and we give them naloxone, there are really immediately we see the change of the rat behavior. There are a lot of signs that change. But when given ibogaine, this naloxone-precipitated withdrawal is much, much less. And not only in rats, they were tested also in other animals like monkeys, and it's the same. The place preference paradigm, you give a rat an addict drug, for example, to morphine. You give you learn the possibility of inject themselves the substance, and they do it till death. They even don't eat, don't drink, don't prefer the self-administration of a drug to any other behavior. When given ibogaine, the rats really have much less conditioned place preference. That means they reduce this preference for addictive substances. The same on the locomotor activity of the rats, it's also effective. And on dopamine efflux or dopamine secretion, really reduction of dopamine secretion by all the ibogaine and ibogaine-like substances. Another thing that this effect of dopamine is mediated through NMDA, kappa receptors, serotonin receptors. Now, the evidence of efficacy and subjective effects in humans, the effect on the acute opioid withdrawal, for example, which are the source of information we have. One is the addicts themselves. The demand of the addicts led to an informal treatment network in Europe and the United States, as we said before. The most common indication was, at the beginning at least, was the opioid dependence. And the reported features are reduction in drug craving and opioid withdrawal signs and symptoms within 1 to 2 hours after taking ibogaine and sustained effects afterward. We have on acute opioid withdrawal some reports that I found is Alper et al. Summarized 33 cases treated for the indication of opioid detoxification. It was an informal group. It was not controlled. It was such a descriptive naturalistic work, and he found resolution of the withdrawal signs and symptoms without further drug seeking behavior in 25 patients. Okay, and significantly reduced craving. Marsh, Deborah Marsh, report having treated more than 150 patients in St. Kitts. These are data till 2001. Now I know there are much more cases. And the same, less craving, and something very important, they saw less depression in the patient. People become much less depressive than in the standard population of drug addicts after detoxification, and showed equally effective in methadone and heroin detoxification. The long-term outcomes, Latsov presented at the NIDA ibogaine review meeting held in March 1995, a summary of patients that were treated. Here the numbers are between 1963 and 1995. No, over. Okay. There were 38 reported some use of opioid. 10 of them were additional dependent on other drugs like cocaine, alcohol, or sedative hypnotics. It was a total of 52 treatments from them. 29%, 50 people, stopped using drugs for less than 2 months. Other 29%, other 50 people, more than 2 months, but less than 6 months, stopped cessation of use. 30% for at least 6 months, but less than a year, and 19% for a period greater than a year. This was the distribution of effects of the substance. Something about the subjective effects of the ibogaine. Here is written spiritual awakening. This is one aspect very very interesting from the psychiatric point of view, no? what we see is an initial phase, which initiation, the onset is after 1 to 3 hours of ingestion of the substance, a duration of 4 to 8 hours. And the experiences in this phase are a panoramic readout of long-term memory. This phrase is visit to the ancestor or archetype. described something that I hear of people that used iboga in some of you will give me will say if it's real or not. There is something stereotypic or something repetitive in the experiences of many people using ibogaine. There is let's say it's not correct, but there are two kinds of experiences I understood. One is the personal memory, the personal experiences, or even the traumatic experiences experienced in the past are re-experienced in the treatment with ibogaine. And another aspect is memory common to all the mankind. This spiritual aspect, this common revival of species specific experiences. Naranjo called this experience oneiric experiences because it's not a experience like hallucinations in the psychiatric definition of the term, but is experienced as visions mainly when people close their eyes. No. The second phase, the evaluative or visualization phase, which is in a duration until 20 hours. Less material recalled, but the focus of attention on the evaluation of this experience, okay, and less interest in the external environment. The external environment may even be annoying, and people have to be let alone and to experience these hours with themselves. They are easily distracted and annoyed, they say, and prefer little environmental stimulation. And then there is a residual stimulation phase, okay, which is last till 24 to 72 hours, and they reallocate the attention to the external environment, less subjective psychoactive experience, and mild residual subjective arousal or vigilance. And some troubles with sleep. Then let's say very, very briefly the pharmacokinetics. It's not something very relevant. One thing is people are classified according to the metabolism of ibogaine. Today may be classified according to this metabolizing enzyme in the liver, the P450 enzyme. Maybe classified, I said, in a slow metabolizer, intermediate, and fast metabolizer. That means some of the differences between people, under the effects of ibogaine may be explained for the difference in the metabolizing system, and it may be checked. And I think it has to be checked before if we can. To suspect which will be the response of people to the treatment. Nor ibogaine, as Howard said, is a more polar substance and is a more liposoluble substance, and this explains why it keeps in the body for much longer time. Each form of the drug has different onset, different duration of action, and significant diversity across the patient population. I wanted to show something because I have a shortage of time. The side effects of ibogaine. Ibogaine causes coordination disturbances, is unstable gait and tendency to fall. Hallucinations-like experiences may be seen mainly with very high doses, causes sleep disturbances, concentration and speech troubles, mainly in acute phase. Heart rate and blood pressure may change, mainly a reduction of heart rate and reduction of blood pressure. Nausea and vomiting, which were described, dizziness, light sensitivity, tiredness, and muscle soreness, apparently because of the long-time immobility. About a safety of the sand, of the ibogaine, this is a Purkinje cell. This cell are selectively destroyed by high doses of ibogaine in rats, something like 100 milligram per kilogram intraperitoneal, may activate through the mechanism which we talked about, sigma-2 receptors and MDA, and destroy the cerebellar cells of the Purkinje cells in the cerebellum. Tremor is mainly seen in rats, not in humans, which are in humans were investigated the stability, the body and appendicular tremor, which were transitory. And cardiovascular effects were investigated by MASH, for example, reduced blood pressure, mainly in people taking cocaine, which causes a chronic vasoconstriction. We reduce body water, and then when we give ibogaine, people may have hypotension. We have to replace it with water, and that's the usually elevates the blood pressure. The fatalities, there were a number of fatalities. In France, a woman of 44 died 4 hours after receiving a dose of 4.5 milligram per kilogram of ibogaine. And the autopsies revealed an old MI and severe ischemic heart disease, and was excluded the possibility of a toxic effect of ibogaine. The Holland case was a patient of 24 years old and a German patient who died of unknown reason, and it was not demonstrated a causal effect to the intake of ibogaine. In the United States, it was also reported a case of a woman who had severe ischemic heart disease. The drug is not abused, and the last edition of Kaplan and Sadok say there is little concern about ibogaine liability to abuse, because users do not like the physical side effects at an hallucinogenic dose of 1,500 milligrams. And ibogaine testing, that is what we are planning now in Tel Aviv. Thank you very much.